Hi, it's good to have your company. My name's Simon Smart.
And I'm Justine Toad.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Well, I wonder if you've ever felt this way. Technology is bad because people are not as strong as its pull. That's a quote from a 16-year-old girl who's quoted by Sherry Turkle, who's a professor of social science, in her book Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other. And I guess the point that this teenager was trying to make is that our smartphones, our tablets and other devices pull us into a world that's ours and it's under our control. This world absorbs us and takes our attention away from other people. I wonder if you've ever felt like that, Justine.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think technology does create a really private world where communication is on my terms. You know, I can choose to engage or not engage. And I notice that I start to get a bit huffy if I get a phone call that I wasn't expecting, you know? And I think, oh man, is this going to be 10 minutes? Going to be an hour? And, you know, I'm not the president of the United States. I don't really have those kinds of demands on my time. And yet I kind of pretend as though I do. And I don't necessarily think I'm more selfish than your average person, but I wonder if our technology is training us to behave in particular ways, you know, to kind of think that we have this God complex and therefore we can determine who's going to come near to us and who isn't. But, you know, I don't think that technology is bad on the whole. I just think that we struggle in the way that we use it.
Yeah, it's a bit scary, isn't it? We haven't had our smartphones for all that long. It's not long ago. This was a dream world to have this sort of technology all packed into one device and so ready at hand. And I found myself, I have to say, Justine, I found myself sort of almost, well, a bit hooked to this. Yeah. Like I really have to stop myself, constantly checking emails, jumping online, seeing what's on Twitter, this sort of stuff. And I've had to stop myself sometimes where I'm at home, kids are starting to want to talk to me and I'm, you know, pressing this thing. It's terrible. I'm really having to try to resist that in myself.
Totally. I think, my phone has a light on it that'll blink every time I get a notification. So it's just winking at me and it just bothers me at the back of my head. It reminds me of how in Turkle's book, she talks about this experience of being at a funeral and the woman sitting across from her at the funeral just got out her phone, you know, and started texting. And Turkle says that the point of the whole service, especially at a funeral, is to take a moment, you know, to think about those big questions, those life and death, what's the meaning of all of this? And then she notes that this woman had had this technology for less than 10 years and she found it impossible to sit and take that moment. It's a scary sort of situation.
It really is, especially at a funeral. That seems like an extreme example, but you can see how this creeps into our lives. And that sort of story has a sort of anxious edge to it. It's like we're going online to distract ourselves from something else. It has a real potential for that. And it turns out that most of us need never be offline, ever. We can be constantly on this stuff. Google commissioned a study called Our Mobile Planet that asked people whether they use more than one device at a time. It's probably not surprising to hear that. It turns out that 80% of people did do that. And of that 80%, about half may also be watching television, listening to music, and at least 30% say that they go online when they're accessing the internet on another device. So it's kind of, it's everywhere. Yeah. None of us are seriously kind of wanting to doubt the value that technology can bring, and these handheld devices are amazing machines. They can do wonderful things. But we have to ask when this might take its toll on relationships and our connection with the people around us.
I remember an article written by Celia Walden, who's the wife of a US talk show host, Piers Morgan. And she describes herself as a Twitter widow. And I thought her quote was really telling. She goes, Princess Diana had three people in her marriage. I've got 3 million. And she tells these stories about how her husband, Piers Morgan, has missed his daughter's first steps because he was too busy tweeting. And this may be an overstatement, but at the same time, it may not be. And that's the frightening thing. And I think everyone's had that experience of being paused essentially as if on remote control, like you're having a conversation with someone and then suddenly their phone beeps and then they'll just, you know, it's completely normal nowadays to pick up your phone and have a look at it. And then so you're essentially on pause while they complete their business. And
you can be pouring your heart out to your friend and then all of a sudden his attention is distracted by something that's evidently more important.
Yeah, totally.
Now, we mentioned Sherry Turkle, the sociologist, who goes so far as to say that we've become like modern Goldilockses in the way that we text each other rather than call. Texting means that people are not too close. They're not too far away, but we're just at the right distance. Now, for more on this type of point, Justine, you spoke to Alex Kidman. Alex is a technology journalist and the former editor of Gizmodo and CNET. He reported on a new device called Google Glass that has the potential to make us more antisocial than ever. Let's hear what Alex had to say.
Okay, so Alex, can you explain in layman's terms what kind of technology Google Glass is?
Okay, well, imagine if you took a smartphone, because most people are familiar with smartphones, and you shrunk the whole thing down really, really small and stuck it on a pair of glasses. That's Google Glass in a nutshell. It's basically a pair of glasses that you wear. It provides a little heads-up display, which only you can see, as well as a camera and an internet connection. So that pretty much anything that you can do on a smartphone right now, you'd be able to do on these, but you can do it in your vision, in a heads-up display, in that kind of style that sci-fi movies always love.
Yes, it does sound really sci-fi. Now, when I'm walking along, I'm seeing people looking down at their phones all the time. You're saying that they'll just be focusing on their glasses in front of them rather than their phones?
Yes, exactly. And I mean, Google's already seeded out some samples early to people who were particularly keen and particularly well off to afford them, because they weren't cheap.
Right,
and people are already experimenting with this stuff, taking it to concerts and things like that, where you always see people, you know, holding up phones and so on and realising that, hey, they can actually watch the concert in front of them instead, which is a radical idea to some people's way of thinking. But that kind of application is where it comes in. And I think that's where it's actually got a lot of benefit in certain contexts.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we can all imagine. I think there was a... someone was skydiving and you could actually see the skydive proceed as recorded by the glasses. But you also write in the article that you're worried about the social aspect of having heads-up information distracting from the world around us, this is a quote from you, creating yet more introverts. Now, like, you're a tech writer, you're no, like, Luddite. You really love this stuff, don't you? But tell us why that kind of introversion bothers you.
Okay, well, you see it already, again, with smartphones, that people do wander down the streets and their head's stuck in their smartphone or they're sitting waiting for a bus. And in some ways, this is not necessarily a terrible thing in that, you know, if you're just passing the time anyway, it's not necessarily a problem. But it can become addictive. And I think there's a dividing line there, actually, between the technology and the information that lies behind it. The technology is what makes it possible, but what we're really talking about here is connecting to information sources, typically over the internet, whether you're checking social media, whether you're reading an interesting article or watching a video or whatever. It's this huge wealth of information that we've got access to, and I think that's what's really quite addictive, because I think as human beings, generally, we kind of thirst for knowledge, and there's so much out there, and there is more than you could logically or conceivably ever consume, and the ability to do that is quite addictive in and of itself. And when it goes over the top, that's when it becomes a real problem. Whether that's because you're paying too much attention to your phone and not to the person who's having a discussion with you, or because you walked in front of that bus because you were busy sending a text.
It can get pretty frightening in that case. Now, you mentioned that you see people on, you know, like, well, I mean, I see people on the train all the time just with their heads buried in their phones. Now, I think a lot of us struggle with having limits around our use of technology, but I'm guessing that if we struggle, the average person, then someone like a technology geek like yourself would really struggle. So do you reckon that you're addicted?
Mildly so, not necessarily massively problematically so, or I'd like to think that way, but I suppose that's classic addict talk. I enjoy it, and the way I try to view it is that I enjoy it in pretty much exactly the same way that people get fanatical about TV shows or sports teams. You'll see people, you know, going around decked in their favourite sports uniform, even though very, very clearly they've never played for the team, and they'll have posters, and they'll have videos, and they'll have this and that, and it's their favourite topic to talk about. Mine happens to be technology, so I'm lucky in that, you know, I'm actually able to earn a living writing about it. I don't necessarily see that as unhealthy, but it is a matter of all things in moderation. I stick my head inside a computer and stay there all day, no, that's not going to be good for me. And if nothing else, my body is going to tell me that at the end of the day when my eyes are red and bleary.
So what other practical steps then do you take to, I guess, put limits around your use of technology?
Okay, well, personally, this is going to sound a little bit kind of weirdly redundant. I use technology to stop me using technology. There's all sorts of applications that you can get. If you're someone who sits at a computer all day, there are applications that you can get that are largely designed around ergonomic principles to tell you every half hour or 15 minutes or hour or whatever period you specify to take a break. And some of them will black out the screen. Some of them will just pop up a little reminder. Some of them will block the computer entirely. I've used that kind of thing for years, because it's a good idea to get up, to walk around, to kind of take that kind of break. And you can get, you can get similar things in a lot of, I've just recently been testing a fitness band that will detect if I'm not moving for a specified period of time, i.e. I'm sitting at my desk. It'll tell me to get up. That's a kind of short form version of how you do that. In the longer form, it's a question of discipline, as it is, I guess, with anything that could be addictive. It's a question of saying, right, I've got this much time to do this, and then I'll do that. Again, I don't know that the technology is specifically at fault. I think it comes down to where you actually put your personal priorities.
Oh, completely. So if I was to have dinner at your place, would you have the phone on the table?
No.
No.
If you were to have dinner at my place, I wouldn't necessarily have the phone at the table. It would be somewhere, obviously. I'm a busy working journalist. But in genuine social interaction areas, like having someone around for dinner, no, that's impolite, and frankly, it's a little ridiculous because it creates this problem of disconnection. I love the method, and I can't recall off the top of my head who came up with it, saying if you're out at dinner with someone, the first person to reach for their phone is the person who's paying for dinner, and if you get to the end of the meal, then everyone just splits it equally.
I like that. That's good.
Well, that was technology journalist Alex Kidman. Sherry Turkle says that the solution to this problem is not to get rid of technology, but just to put it in its rightful place. Justine, have you thought about how we might go about doing that?
Yeah, and I think Alex talks about that when he says that there are limits and there are boundaries that we need to observe. I think that limits aren't popular today, but because we think that they're all about restricting our enjoyment. But in some ways, I think limits can also be about enhancing our enjoyment. You know, I think that always being connected has its costs, and we've been speaking about them today. And so it makes sense that if we put some certain things in place, then that can help us use it better. You know, I think of the mum whose 18-point contract with her son, you know, when she gave him an iPhone, she just wrote this thing up, and it was all about encouraging to have face-to-face interaction. Hand the phone over at night, turn it off in public, don't keep taking all these excessive pictures, just remember it. Maybe even leave the phone home at some times. And this is my favourite, that he should wander without Googling, you know? So, and then she says, oh, by the way, all of this also applies to life. So I think that's a really wise thing for her to say.
Yeah, a few years ago, William Powers wrote a book called Hamlet's Blackberry, and it was all about taking an internet Sabbath, not going online. He recommended from Friday night right through to Monday morning. And it's interesting that this idea of Sabbath thinking, not all that popular or trendy these days, but it takes on a renewed force when we can think of the benefits that it can have in this discussion of being online.
Oh, totally. I mean, it's really old school wisdom, but it's so important for us today. You know, like a Sabbath mentality is all about the wisdom of limits, or in some ways having particular rhythms of life. And this, of course, takes its cue from the creation of the world. You know, according to the Bible, God rested on the seventh day, and we know that, you know, God is supposed to be this all-powerful God. Doesn't mean that he was tired. He didn't need to take a rest, but he did, and that was really deliberate. So in some ways, you can see the idea of the Sabbath as a way to ensure that we just don't keep on doing what we're doing, and then miss out on the real point of what it should be, which is about life is about enjoying other people, about enjoying the world around us, and not just getting caught up in the sorts of things that we can do. So I really like what this mum's doing, because she's encouraging her son to respect the limits to this, you know, limitless technology. And I think that all of us can benefit from that as well.
It's about being truly connected. And that takes some intentional living, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Thanks so much, Justine.